님은? Anybody else need one? Okay. You got another one. We're going to pick up where we left off on Sunday, and we want to begin by giving a little better answer to the question that Karen asked on Sunday about the difference between the blessing and the birthright. I did do a little more digging on that, and we'll take care of that just real quickly before we get back to the story. I think it's helpful to understand exactly what's involved. Because in this one story of Jacob and Esau, both privileges, if you want to call them that, are involved. What I could find was this. Regarding the birthright, and the Bible does speak to this, these were rights, of course, that belonged only to the eldest son of the firstborn. Hence, that's why it's called a birthright. Now, the family name and whatever titles would go along with that would pass through him, not any of the other sons. That is the case. Remember, we're in the days of the patriarchs. The law hasn't come into force yet. So, how was it that God spoke to the creation? He spoke through the fathers, the patriarchs. And he would act as priest for the family. So that would pass also to the eldest son upon the death of the father. The double portion is a part of this also. In Deuteronomy chapter 21, 15 to 17, Moses puts a provision in the law. Well, the Lord does, but of course, Moses reveals it. At that place it says, and we'll just summarize for sake of time, paraphrase, if a man have two wives, and one is loved and the other is unloved, and if the unloved wife bears the oldest son, the law said that the father could not give or show preference to the firstborn of the loved wife because she did not have the legitimate firstborn son. And in verse 17 particularly, it says, he shall receive the double portion, which goes to the legitimate firstborn of the father. So the birthright did incorporate into it the double portion. So whatever, how many ever children a man would have when it came time to divvy up his estate, if he had seven, then they would divide it up into eighths and he would get a double portion. He would get 2/8 or 1/4 of the estate. And it did not affect the promises of God. This is just the birthright. God's promises were over and above all this, and case in point, Jacob. The promise of God first made to whom? Abraham. Who's it going to go through? Isaac and then Jacob. Not Esau. God's going to use Jacob rather than Esau because of the kind of person Esau has already shown himself to be. We've already covered that by selling the birthright. So God works above and over whether or not a child is the firstborn or not. And this case illustrates that beautifully. So there's the general information regarding the birthright. Now, regarding the blessing, which we're studying right now in Genesis 27, that Jacob also stole, this seemed to be more of a ceremonial rite rather than rather than specific privileges that belong to the actual firstborn son. Though not the promises that made by God, because as we just said, God acts above and over those. Though it's not the promises, this particular privilege or rite, if you will, was more in line with what God had promised, starting with Abraham, than the birthright. In case in point, look here in Genesis 27, 28 and 29. After, and we'll get to this text just in a moment because this is where we're actually at in the story. Isaac is blessing. Who does he think he's blessing? Esau, but of course he's not. But look what he says, specifically in verse 28. What name does he invoke? He invokes Jehovah's name, God. May God give you the dew of heaven and of the fatness of the earth. May peoples serve you, verse 29, and nations bow down to you. Be master of your brothers, and may your mother's sons bow down to you. And the last part of verse 29, and this gets to question 8 on page 16, cursed be those who curse you, and blessed be those who bless you. Have you heard that before? Where else did God say this? Genesis 12. Go back to Genesis 12 right quick. The promise of God to Abraham. Look at the last part of verse 3. Here we had the three promises made. I'll make of thee a great nation. I'll give thee a land. Then, of course, the seed promise or the Messiah promise, first part of verse 3. Well, I'm sorry, the last part of verse 3. Look at the first part of verse 3. What did Jehovah say to Abraham? I will bless those who bless you, and I'll curse those who curse you. So this is the part of the promise God made to Abraham that's being carried on now through, of course, it was made to Isaac, Jacob's father. Now it's being made to Jacob, and then he'll pass it on to who will be favored among Jacob's sons. Who will the Lord come through? It'll be Judah. So this is the blessing. It's a little different than the birthright, but I think we can at least see these points. And this was usually done as the patriarch was nearing death. Again, case in point, although he didn't die, what does Isaac think here in this chapter? He's going to live 37 more years. 43 more years. He dies at 175. He's going to live at least 30 or 40 more years. Off the top of my head, I forget how many more years it is, but he thought he was old and ready to die, so that's why he sent Esau out to get the food and bring it back, that I may bless you before I die. So this particularly was done as the patriarch would near death. Yes, he thought he did, but he's not blessing who he thought he blessed. That's right. So there's just a short difference, and that was a good question, Karen. The Bible does show us a little difference between the birthright and the blessing. Okay, now this is where we got to on Sunday. And old Isaac is blessing Esau, his son. And so Rebekah overhears the plans, but she has other ideas. And so she sets in motion a scheme, as we talked about, having Jacob deceive his father with her help. Jacob is logically objecting to it, but she said, "Your curse be upon me. Just you do what I tell you." And so he does. And where we got to was this, we also talked about what motivated her, and I don't think it had anything to do with what God had told her previously about the younger shall rule over the older, rather the older shall serve the younger. It's because of her preference for Jacob as her favorite. And she wants him to be blessed instead of Esau, who of course was Isaac's favorite. And she is not inquiring about this now as she did before when the twins struggled inside of her, Genesis 25 told us. She simply is taking matters into her own hands to work this out as she wants it to work. So this takes us now to chapter 27, now verse 18 through verse 27. So the planning has all been done. All right. Rebekah has fixed the savory dish. And so now it's time for Jacob to act it out. So he goes in to where his father is, and what's he say? He says, "Arise, father, here I am. Eat of my gain that you may bless me." Something like that? Is that basically what he says? All right, so this is top of the question, or top of page 16 now. What does Jacob do the first time? Verses 18 to 19. We're going to call it what it is. He lies regarding his identity. Did Isaac question who it is? Yes. He says, last part of verse 18, "Who are you, my son?" And Jacob says, "I'm Esau." Well, that's not the truth. That's a bold-faced lie. All right. Verse 20, what did Jacob do a second time? What was he lying about this time? Yeah, he lies about the success of the hunt. Isaac has a good question. What does Isaac ask him? How did this happen so fast? I mean, I've not sent you out very long ago, is really what he's saying. And this happened awful quick. To go out and kill the animal and hunt him down and field dress him and take him back and prepare him and all this business. How did all this happen? What did Jacob say? "The Lord your God caused it to happen to me." Well, no such a thing did he do. This was none of the Lord's doings. This was Rebekah's doings. So that's a lie. And then, of course, the last part of the question, verses 21 to 24, what's he do a third time? What's he lie about this time? All right, he lies again regarding his identity when questioned more specifically by Isaac. What does Isaac ask him? He says, "Please come close that I may feel you, my son." Now, why is that important? Remember, Esau was hairy. Jacob was more smooth-skinned. So let me make sure as to who this is. And so he comes close. Jacob comes near Isaac. What does Isaac say in verse 22? Well, it's the voice of... I mean, parents know who the children are. It's the voice of Jacob, but it is the hand of Esau. What was it that Jacob was wearing? Two things that he had on. Or he had the skin of a goat that Rebecca had slaughtered or killed. So she put the skin on his hands. And the garments of Esau. It would smell like Esau. It would smell like him. And his hands would smell like the outdoors, which that is Esau's domain, obviously. So, and also keep in mind, back in verse 1, what is working in all this? How was Isaac described again? He can't see very well. So you see someone here taking advantage of an older man. Let's just again call it what it is. Using this to his advantage. So what we're saying is, he lied one time, he lied two times, he lied three times to get this blessing. And he's doing it without any pang of conscience whatsoever. He objected to his mother when she laid out the plan before him. But what about it now? Oh, he's all in it right now. He's going full steam ahead. No problem at all. So, the voice of his son and the timing of the meal gave Isaac some real concern. Obviously, that's why he's asking these questions. But the final deception, Isaac says to his son, Come near, come close, and do what? Kiss me. Or that I may kiss you. Which one is it? Yeah. Verse 26. Come close, please, and kiss me, my son. A very dear show of affection display between family members or kinsmen. And so Jacob has to come near his father, and he has to bend down or whatever he has to do, squat down by his father, or whatever he is. And so Isaac would smell the smell, feel the... And does he ask him again? Yes, are you really my son? This was before, verse 24. Thank you, Albert. He says, yes, I am. So there's another lie. So that's the final deception. Was this tender moment where that would usually be genuine and real, and Jacob is using it to further this deceptive plan. I think that's cold and harsh. And honorable and good as Isaac was in this exchange, he didn't do anything wrong. In fact, I would say Isaac's a victim. He's wanting to bless his son. Now, I'm not going to cut Isaac any slack in terms of showing preference. I think we've already discussed that previously. But regarding this episode, Isaac's just wanting to do something for his son, and by all rights, Esau, wasn't he entitled to the blessing? He was. He's the firstborn. So Isaac's just wanting to do this by the book, if you will. But as honorable and good as he was, Jacob was equally treacherous in deceiving his father. And we've got to nail one more person along with this. His mother was just as scheming in this as Jacob was. She bears just as much guilt, and maybe even more so, because this was all her idea. This was all her plan to have this worked out this way. So that takes us through question 7 in terms of the what I'm calling the final deception down through the 27th verse. Well, yeah. Yeah. And how much of a difference it was between his skin and Jacob's. I mean, it was just stark difference. As hairy as he was, Jacob was just as smooth. But that was their makeup. That was how they differed one from another. Okay, well, let's look at the blessing itself. Last part of verse 27. through verse 29. Freddie, read for us the blessing of Isaac, please. As he now, he's convinced it's Esau, isn't he? I mean, he's heard the voice, but I'm going to lay that aside. It smells like Esau, and it's him. So here's the blessing. All right, Freddie. All right, again, there's the last part, the last phrase. That is from the same as Genesis 12 in verse 3 that was spoken to Abraham by Jehovah himself. So here's the blessing. Isaac connected the smell of his son with the smell of the outdoors. And how did he put it again? That was blessed by the Lord. So that's an honorable thing to say, but the tragedy is that's not what's going on here. That animal that he smells did not come from this son out there hunting it and killing it, bringing it back to prepare. It was from the family herd, if you will, the goat. But that's what he says. And then the blessing pertained to the future success of the family. Because again, he thinks he's near death, especially under this son's leadership after Isaac dies. May God give you the dew of heaven and of the fatness of the earth and an abundance of grain and new wine. That's talking about the success. May this family prosper under whose leadership? Your leadership. After I'm gone, you're the head of the family. And may the family be prosperous. May we not be in want. May we not need anything. Let God give you and those who will then be under you the dew of heaven, of the fatness of the earth. He's pronouncing a blessing of prosperity upon this son and upon all those who will be in his charge. And also, Jacob would be blessed by God physically. Now, he's blessing Jacob, so we're going to put Jacob in here instead of Esau. He'll be blessed by God physically. Jacob would be ruler over many people, and especially including who, does he say? Yes, verse 29. May peoples serve you. May nations bow down to you. And may your mother's sons bow down to you. Well, under Jacob, whose, of course, his later name became Israel, did nations bow down to Israel? Absolutely. That took place. Did his brothers serve him? Didn't Israel bring Edom under control? Yes, especially under David, later in the kingdom years. That took place. So Jacob is, for all intents and purposes, this blessing, but it's really a prophecy. And it did come to pass. It did come about. It will be true. And Jacob would enjoy the original blessing that God gave to Abraham. Again, that's the last part of verse 29. And it's almost a word-for-word repetition for what you see in Genesis 12 and verse 3. Pronounced upon this one now. So now we see the lineage. Abraham and then Isaac. And of course not Esau, but to Jacob. All right. Now, before we go any further, let me throw this question out here. Esau did not sell this, did he? He sold the birthright. So how is it that the blessing did not pass through Esau? We can understand how Jacob got the birthright through deception. Willingly, Esau sold the birthright. But already, and I think in this we can see the omniscience of God. What did God know about Esau, just overall, generally speaking? What kind of person was he? He lied. He didn't care about the birthright. And that's why we've already looked at Hebrews 12. The writer called Esau a profane and godless person. And God can't use somebody like that in his purpose. Now he can use such a person to further His will, but He can't use that kind of person in the line at this juncture of the Bible story in building the family and carrying out the promise that, of course, would eventually result in who? What person? The Messiah. So Esau has shown himself to be that kind of person already. Thoughtless, reckless, profane, again, as the Hebrew writer points it out, and godless, if you will. So that's the blessing that has come now to Jacob. And so he has the meal, he blesses him, and that's the end of that episode. Rebekah and Jacob got what they wanted. And Isaac does not know any different. So we come to verse 29, And the first part of verse 30, as soon as the blessing had been finished, Jacob had hardly gone out. You can almost get the idea that they just kind of pass. As one goes out, the other comes in. Well, Esau comes in. Well, what's he got? He went to the field and he made the kill. He dressed it, fixed it the way his father likes it, and he comes in. And does the verse even say, not knowing what went on? He's unknown to him as to what just had taken place? No, it doesn't say that, does it? I thought it said that. Okay, well, we know that's the case anyway. Verse 30 and 31. He made the dish. He comes in the tent where his father is, and rightly so, he'll say, "Arise, my father, eat of thy son's game, that you may bless me." That was the wrong thing to say. And of course, that's what he would ordinarily say. That's what his father wanted him to do. Now, how does Isaac react when he hears those words? Who are you? And my version even says that how did Isaac react physically? He trembled violently. Mine says, trembled, shook violently. He knew something was wrong when he heard that. He returns home from the hunt, expecting to be blessed. Isaac first inquires as to his identity, then he trembles violently. He has been deceived. Isaac's been deceived. And Esau has been defrauded. Again. You'll see. Verse 33, he asked who he is. Verse 32, "I am Esau, your firstborn. Who was he then that hunted game and brought it to me so that I ate of all of it before you came and blessed him?" The end of verse 33. What have we learned about patriarchal blessings once they're given? It's set. You don't get a do-over. There's no mulligans. It's done. Yes, and he will be blessed. That's just what took place. So everybody knows what happened now. And so Esau does what? Verse 34. Cries with a loud cry, a bitter cry. Begging for what? "Don't you have a blessing for me, Father? Is there just one blessing? Surely you got something for me." Well, what all had Isaac blessed Jacob with? Everything there was. He got it all. There's nothing left for Esau. So a loud, bitter cry. He begs Isaac for a blessing also, verse 34. He bemoans Jacob's two deceptions, verse 35. He says, Isaac, that should be verse 36. "Your brother came deceitfully and has taken away your blessing. Then he said, is he not rightly named Jacob?" Now let's go back real quickly again. When the twins were born, Esau was born first. And what did we say? How did the Bible describe Jacob's birth? Coming out of the womb, what was he doing? He was holding on to Esau's heel. One who takes the heel was his name. They named him thus Jacob, which means supplanter, which also means one who deceives by treachery. And he says, is he not rightly named Jacob? He's living up to the meaning of his name. Esau continues in verse 36. He took away my birthright. Now let's stop right there just a minute. He took away my birthright. Well, not entirely true. Yes, Jacob got it, but it wasn't stolen. This blessing was deceitfully stolen. The birthright was voluntarily given up for a mess of pottage, for a bowl of lentils or a bowl of soup. But he bemoans it nonetheless. He took away my birthright, and behold, now he has taken away my blessing. Again, he says, have you not reserved a blessing for me? You just can imagine the tears that Esau was shedding. I'm sure he wasn't being quiet about this. I'm sure he was quite vocal. Verse 37, Isaac answered and said to Esau, "Behold, I have made him your master, and all his relatives I have given to him as servants, and with grain and new wine I have sustained him." That is to say, I pronounced the blessing of prosperity upon him. Now, as then for you, what can I do, my son? Esau's, do you have anything else, Father? And Isaac's saying, what can I do for you? I mean, I've given all that there is. I've pronounced the whole thing. It's all on Jacob now. So he implores his father one final time for a blessing. Verse 38. Again, he asks, do you have only one blessing, my father? Bless me, even me also, O my father. And what does Moses write at the end of verse 38? He lifted up his voice and he wept. Well, Isaac will say something to Esau. Yes, Brother Miller. No. The blessing cannot be shared. No more than the birthright could be shared. It was intended for one son. Now, as we've said, the birthright rightfully belonged to Esau. He gave that up. The blessing also belonged to Esau. And he had nothing to do with losing that. Jacob came in and stole it. But once both were given pronounced upon, well, particularly the blessing, once pronounced upon Jacob, there's nothing left for Esau to have. Yes, they were. This was a patriarchal rite of passage, if you will. It's what every head of the father or every head of the family did to his oldest son in preparation or anticipating his death. And you need to be kind of put in proper place so that you assume the headship of this family after I'm gone. And that's it. It was meant to go to the coming head or the succeeding head of the family. Yes, sir. What law? You mean the blessing and the birthright? Well, that was, I mean, there's no provision in the gospel of Christ for this. So I would say at the cross. Yes. Even though I mentioned the passage from Deuteronomy 21, when we started class talking about the birthright itself, that passage, which of course was written after this, much later after this, again, does mention the double portion. So that provision in the law was there, even after the law came and succeeded the patriarchal days. So I would think all that stood in place until the cross. Yes. Yes. Because remember, to a Jew, what was everything to a Jew or to a Hebrew? Tribe, ancestor, family. That was everything. And so to have that continue through the family was vitally important. But Christ has removed all those restrictions, all those limitations. And now, like in Galatians 3, there's neither Jew nor Greek. All that's been removed. It's just not important after the cross. Yes. I don't think so. Yeah, right. I think it was up to the patriarch when to pronounce the blessing. And usually, again, it was done more so toward the end of his life so that there would be no confusion as to who was the head of the family. I mean, it was done before he died. Now, when he chose to do it, I guess it was up to him. The birthright pretty much was set when what happened? When the firstborn was born. And it might be, you know, it of course will be years before he gets a double portion of the inheritance, but in terms of the rite of birth, that takes place when the eldest son is born. But the blessing takes place toward the end of the patriarch's life. And Jacob, I keep saying the wrong name, Isaac sees himself toward the end of his life. That's why he's pronouncing the blessing now. But again, he'll live 30 or 40 more years before he actually dies. So that's what's going on here. And Esau now knows he's got nothing. So what words does Isaac have for Esau? He can't give him the blessing. Esau is begging for the blessing. What words does Isaac have for him? This is question 10. Verses 39 and 40. I'm sorry. Okay, in Genesis 50, when Jacob is the patriarch and he's dispensing the blessings upon his sons, what about prosperity? Is that promised to Esau? No. In fact, look what Isaac says. Genesis 27, now verse 39. Behold, away from the fertility of the earth shall be your dwelling. See, there'll be no fatness of earth for you, no dew of heaven for you, and away from the dew of heaven from above. Jacob had been promised the dew of the heaven. Esau says, you won't have any of that. And by your sword you shall live, and your brother you shall serve. He tells him, you're going to be subject to what I've already promised Jacob. That's going to be your lot. One glimmer of hope, last part of verse 40. What was it about? All right. There will come a point in time where you will break this yoke upon your neck. And again, history will show us, and we can turn to the Bible. I think it's in the book of 2 Chronicles. I didn't write the reference down. Where Edom did rebel against Israel during David's reign, I believe, and they did rebel and were not servants. Now David quickly, I think, came back and brought them back under bondage again, but they did revolt and had somewhat of a respite, some freedom from their servitude. But other than that, Isaac says to Esau, that's what you're going to have. Yes, the Herods were of the Edomites also. That is correct. Okay. Now, let's make an application, and I skipped the last part of question 9. Again, turn to Hebrews 12. We'll go back there. We were there on Sunday, and we looked at verse 16. Well, we also want to look at verse 17. Notice in Hebrews 12, verse 16 mentions the birthright. What does verse 17 mention? It mentions the blessing. See that? It gets both of them in here. And we're trying to make a distinction between the two. They are not the same. So an application now. Verse 17, after we're exhorted not to be like this immoral or godless, profane person like Esau, who sold his birthright for a single meal. Now verse 17, for you know that even afterwards, when he desired to inherit the blessing, he was rejected, for he found no place for repentance. Now, that can be kind of a tricky way to make the point the writer's making. I don't think we see back in this case, I don't see Esau trying to make any repentance. Usually we see the word repentance talking about someone who's trying to turn from sin. But I think the word repentance is being used in a more general sense in the terms of there was no place for a change of events. Okay? How sure was the blessing pronounced by Isaac? It was set. It was not going to be altered. Esau wanted it altered. Esau wanted the chain of events changed. And how bad did he seek for it? Hebrews 12:17. He sought it with tears. He tried his best to get it changed, but it's not going to happen. All right. So now what's the application? Well, Esau was now in a position that could not be changed or altered. That's the point we're trying to make. No repentance, even though he sought it with tears. Well, through his earlier disposition, again, 25 and verse 34 is where he sold the birthright. He showed that he devalued something that was extremely and spiritually important. And he just casually cast it aside for one meal to fill his belly for a few hours. He already showed himself at that time he was willing to bargain away something important. And that's true. He did. And likewise, and I think here's the application, likewise, if we're not careful, can we put ourselves in situations through our behavior that we may one day act like Esau? We want a reversal of the chain of events that we've set in motion. But guess what? Sometimes, now not every time, but sometimes, what can happen? Those will not be changed. We may seek such a change with tears, with vehement crying, just like Esau saw it. But it won't happen. Give me a couple of examples. What if you murder somebody? You have to pay the price. That certainly should include life in prison, and it may even include what? capital punishment. Now, you may wring your hands in your jail cell. You may wring your hands when you're on death row awaiting your execution, crying. Would there be some way to reverse the way this is headed? No. Not a bit. See? What about fornication? The Bible speaks against that too. Well, many times, what's one of the byproducts of fornication? Illegitimate child? Or how about in our modern time? Sexually transmitted diseases could ruin your life or the life of either the young woman or the young man. And so then you spend the rest of your life wringing your hands, wouldn't you? And you may long to go back in time to the day, if I could do this over, well, I certainly would. And you may cry your eyes out. But guess what? There'll be no change. So one of the points we're making is, don't be like Esau. Don't be that kind of person that shows he really, for all intents and purposes, he was spiritually shallow. He just did not put a high premium, a high value on the things that mattered to God. Now again, with the blessing, he didn't give it away. It was stolen. But he was already seen as a spiritually shallow person because he sold away the birthright. And thus we're exhorted to not be like him in that way. We too may face consequences that cannot be repented, and that means changed or altered, even though we may seek such with tears. And so that's why we're exhorted. Again, the writer says, see to it that no one comes short of the grace of God, Hebrews 12 and verse 15, that no root of bitterness springing up causes trouble, and by it many may be defiled, and that there be no immoral, godless person like Esau. Don't be like this man. It's a great lesson. How much less trouble would we have in the kingdom if people who are entertaining sinful things would think about Esau? What do you think? Be a whole lot better for them personally and also for the kingdom itself. People can ruin themselves, can't they? Because of one passion or another, or one careless moment, one thoughtless deed, one or another. All right, well, quickly now, we got about 2 minutes left. Back to the text now. So Isaac's final words, he does pronounce these certainties upon Esau. He would not enjoy Jacob's prosperity. He would serve Jacob, however he would rebel and would cast off those shackles. He would break the yoke off of his neck at some point in time, which he did. All right, now, how does Esau react? He's had misery. He's miserable because of what he just heard, but his misery has now turned to malice. What's he say, Albert? Not much longer, my dad's going to be dead, and then what? I'm going to kill him. He's determined. He's got me these two times, and I'm going to take him out. But he has at least enough respect for Isaac that he won't do it when? Until after Isaac is dead. I think that's pretty pitiful for the motivation. But at least he respects his father enough. Again, another indication that of the type of person he was. I'm telling you, I think he publicized these intentions. How do we know that? Now, quickly, look at verse Genesis. I'm in Exodus. Where did that look like it ought to? Genesis 27, verse 41 says, Esau said this to himself, I'm going to kill Isaac, or kill Jacob. But what do we see in verse 42? How did Rebecca know this? Who did the first telling of it? Esau. If this was an inward decision, he talked about it somewhere. See, again, this shows the kind of person he was. He let it slip. Whether it was accidentally or he just didn't care. But it became known to Rebecca, and so how did she feel about those plans? You can't kill my baby. Jacob's my baby. We're told. Someone told. Yes, but if Esau first thought this to himself, he had to be the first one to tell it to somebody who then, some along the line, then eventually Rebekah knew. Yes, Karen, real quick. Yes, they're not young boys. They're at least 60 or 70. You are correct. But I'm just simply saying, Esau, again, shows to be this kind of profane, not a spiritual person. He's talking about it, but he's broadcasting murder now. And that's his plan. All right, we'll pick up here, Lord willing, on Sunday. Then we'll go ahead and start the next lesson. So finish up lesson 8, and then we'll get to lesson 9. Thank you for your participation tonight and your good comments.